From SDPB Radio, I'm Josh Heyer, and you're listening to the In the Moment News Podcast. Each week, In the Moment with Lori Walsh brings you news and arts coverage from across the state. Listen live at 11 a.m. Central, 10 Mountain on SDPB Radio, or tell your smart speaker, play SDPB. You can find every In the Moment segment at listen.sdpb.org or subscribe to the In the Moment Segments Podcast. And now, it's your weekly roundup in news coverage.
It's a new week, and we're set to introduce you to a whole new slate of candidates as part of SDPB's Meet the Candidates series. First up, we welcome Ryan Ryder, a Democrat candidate for State Senate in District 33.
Ryan Ryder, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about you. You came from the East Coast. What brought you to the middle part of the United States?
Oh, about 20 years ago, the Ellsworth Air Force Base brought me out here. I had gone into the Air Force, and this was my first assignment, and I worked as both a criminal defense and criminal prosecutor out at the base.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your service. We appreciate that. Let's talk about your district. What do you know about District 33? What can you tell us about District 33?
District 33 is located kind of in a horseshoe shape almost around Rapid City. It extends across the northern part of the city into North Rapid and then out towards where I live, Black Hawk and Somerset area, and then all down the west side towards the Red Rock area. So it's a pretty broad district. There's a lot of different concerns, different communities that have issues that they have facing, and they need the legislators to be stepping up to the plate and taking care of.
What decisions were behind you running for office?
For the most part, just you know, looking at watching what happens in Pierre and wanting to be more involved. Kind of some sense of dissatisfaction with the current administration and governor's office and the legislatures, as well as my specific representatives not necessarily meeting up with the same goals and ideals that I had. And I think there's a lot of people in my community that share the same concerns that I do.
We've never met. I don't know you. I'm assuming you're a family man, correct?
I am. I'm married. I have five kids, ranging from high school age down to elementary.
Five kids. That's great. That's my question to you is, I'm guessing they're supportive. What kind of conversations did you have with your family about this endeavor?
Oh, sure. They know I'm outspoken and have my own thoughts on issues as they come up, and I'm reading them in the newspaper or I'm hearing them here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. So they're supportive. They said, you know, rather than listening to me spout off at home, they'd sure like to see me out going out and talking to people and seeing if my ideas resonate with people in the community.
As you get out in District 33, what are you hearing from the people in your district?
You know, it's been hard to get out. I did run 2 years ago and ran 2018, where I was able to do a lot more door knocking and up close and personal meetings with people. This has been a lot more community forums on Zoom meetings or making some phone calls here and there and just hearing from constituents that have concerns that reach out to me on email. But, you know, the same type of concerns are out there. You know, one of the big ones recently and unfortunately in the past couple months has been issues at the Hideaway Hills development right down the street from where I live in District 33, where there was a development that was built over abandoned gypsum mine, and it's really tragically devastated a large community and number of people that don't know what they're going to do with the houses that they used to live in.
Yeah, we were going to talk about that here in just a minute, but one other thing I wanted to touch on too, and it's been a topic in this state for a while. Talk about your feelings on Medicaid expansion here in South Dakota.
Well, and you know, this I really became aware of it when I ran 2 years ago. And at the time, I had the same feelings and thoughts that I have now, that I don't understand why we haven't expanded Medicaid here in South Dakota. It's a win-win for the individuals that would receive the expansion. The state's not going to suffer economically for the expansion. You know, just to, July 1st, Oklahoma voters decided that they would expand, and just last Tuesday, Missouri voters saw the light, and same thing, they voted to expand Medicaid. We've been talking about health more in the news in the last 6 months than we have in a long time, and that's directly what this would go towards. Medicaid expansion has been considered for now almost 10 years, and even in 2015, Governor Dugard was behind the plan, said the numbers at that time was it would increase health care for up to 55,000 South Dakotans. And I just don't see the point in whether or not it's trying to make a political point that's going to hurt people, take away their health, remove the possibility of extended health care for those citizens when we have the option to expand that here in South Dakota.
I can just hear somebody asking the question, because it only takes one to ask one question. The thought is that affordable here in South Dakota? Do you think that's feasible?
I do. And the first step of this is that it's federal funds that are just being flatly refused by the state. It's not it's not something that's going to dip into your and have a new line item in your taxes. The concern that's been raised is whether or not in the long term, if that's part of that financial burden is going to fall back on the states. But as other states have shown, it's not a substantial burden that would, again, affect anyone. And really the bonus there is just that it's helping people be covered in terms of their health. And when you look at preventative care, you're actually going to be cutting down that extended health care cost that we're looking at on the back end of people getting sick and having to deal with insurance companies and falling into Medicaid categories that they would otherwise be able to prevent up on the front end through this health care.
Another topic you feel strongly about is the supermajority, 24 years of a supermajority here in South Dakota. Talk about that and how you feel about that.
Sure. And that's kind of just a overview of what some of the concerns that I've seen as I've gotten more involved in politics. When you have two sides discussing an issue, usually you can come up with some sort of middle ground. You can come to some compromise, persuasive arguments that help best serve the community. But when you don't have any diversity of voices, it more or less becomes a runaway train. It's kind of listening to legislators who who share the same idea, bickering about details that really don't help their communities. You end up also having mindsets take over that don't push back when there's a problem. I mean, I guess one of the perfect examples is the $350,000 that was taken out of South Dakota taxpayers to fund the campaign rally up at 4th of July at Mount Rushmore. That should have been funded through donations or individual, but it was actually taken out of money that was designated for South Dakota infrastructure. To her credit, Taffy Howard in my district did at least make a statement saying that this should have been privately funded. But when you have legislators who don't even speak up when taxpayer money is being used for projects that are designated otherwise, then you basically have a non-functioning legislature.
Our guest has been Ryan Ryder, a Democratic candidate for State Senate in District 33. He'd like your vote. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Again, thank you for having me.
Now, Democrat Reynold Nessaba is running for re-election to the South Dakota State Senate. He has served on the Joint Committee on Appropriations, the Joint Committee on Legislative Procedures, and Retirement Laws. He would represent District 15.
Reynold Nessaba, welcome to In the Moment.
Great to be here. Thanks for welcoming me, Chris.
Let's begin the same, Mr. Nessaba. Let's talk about your district. Tell us about District 15.
Yeah, District 15 is the smallest, most compact, most diverse legislative district outside of our reservation communities.
And we'll talk about more about your district here shortly. But have you been able to get out at all and talk with people in your district? If so, what are you hearing from the people?
Yeah, I'm just starting the door-to-door process. My campaign has really been focused on fundraising and also just doing legislative work. This session has felt like the session never really came to an end. Our Appropriations Committee has continued to meet every month. There's been subcommittees working on letters of intent, and then just ongoing conversation about how best to manage the CARES Act money, which is required, required more time. So unlike the previous 3 years, this fourth year, it seems like the session never really ended.
It's interesting. A lot of people don't know about these committees. I don't know a lot about them myself. So if you would, in a nutshell, talk about the committees you've served on, the Joint Committee on Appropriations. You just mentioned that. Let's start about what's that about?
Yeah, the Joint Committee on Appropriations is the committee that's responsible for creating our budget and managing it. So we are the committee that looks at revenue estimates, both from our staff, our Legislative Research Council, and our fiscal staff. We also look at revenue estimates from the Bureau of Finance and Management. And then a subgroup of that committee makes a decision about what our revenue estimate will be for the year. And then that's the number that we use to then build a budget from. So it's from that we decide how much can we spend on, you know, on education and Medicaid and all of the other items that are in our budget. And again, I just mentioned the, you know, K-12 Board of Regents and Medicaid are really, you know, some of our biggest areas in terms of spending. And then with the CARES Act, we've also been empowered to have ongoing conversations with the executive branch to try and figure out what to do with this CARES Act funding. So the state of South Dakota received $1.25 billion in funding from the federal government in the CARES Act. We've allocated about $200 million of that to counties and cities to make sure that if they had COVID-related expenses, they can appeal to those. The state itself has spent about $75 to $80 million being able to recode, reclassify some expenditures. And a big chunk of that actually was putting some money into our unemployment insurance program to make sure that people would receive those benefits. But one of the things I'm frustrated about at the moment is we still have about $1 billion out there that we don't have a clear path of how we're going to move forward and spend those monies. The way it's set up right now, that $1 billion is, as in the CARES Act, is supposed to be spent by the end of this year, by December 30th. Both the HEROES Act and the HEALS Act, there's conversation on Capitol Hill in D.C. that we are going to extend that until September. But one of my fears is that there are businesses, there are families, there are schools right now that need access to funds, and neither the legislature nor the governor has acted at this point to try and meet those needs. So I'm feeling a little frustration with that at the moment.
Our guest is Democrat Reynold Nesaba. He's running for re-election to the South Dakota State Senate. Mr. Nesaba, if re-elected, it sounds like you're very, very passionate about what you just spoke about. Is that going to be priority for you?
Well, I think right now that COVID-19 pandemic really is driving everything else. There is, you know, we're not going to get our economy back. We're not going to get our jobs back until there's a way to really deal with this crisis. You know, one of the things in South Dakota is that I really am proud, like the governor says, I agree with her. I'm proud of the people of South Dakota. The people of South Dakota on their own have made many responsible decisions. And that's been one of the reasons why our infection rates are as low as they are. Although I still think that having a Sturgis rally this week is problematic and dangerous. I hope that it doesn't lead to a cluster, but it could. So I'm proud of the way that the people of South Dakota have generally acted and kept our infection rates as low as they have been. But we are not going to get people, you know, eager to go back to work as substitute teachers, to be out and spending money and spending time out until we really deal with the pandemic. And so I think we do have to figure out a way to really how to address that. And I think we also have to prepare that this is not going to just vanish, that I think that this pandemic, COVID, is going to be with us for a long time to come. Even once we have a vaccine, that this is going to be a lingering, recurrent part of our reality. And we need to make plans to figure out how to deal with that.
In the time we have left, you mentioned the word proud, and it had made me come up with a thought because, as I mentioned, you're running for re-election. Talk about this past legislative session. What are you most proud of that came out of that?
Yeah, there are really two things. For 2 years, I had been the lead sponsor on a bill to make our driver's license application process, the written examination, and the manuals available in Spanish. But I also realized that being a Democrat in South Dakota means sometimes it's so important to get things done, it's better to let somebody else have the credit. So I approached Senator V.J. Smith from Brookings, and I approached Jess Olson from Rapid City, and I said, this bill is so important to Latino people in my district, but it's also a priority for the Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce and for the contractors and for so many other people across the state. Will you sponsor this bill, and let's get this done this year? And we did. And it was just one of those examples of what you can accomplish if you're if you let other people get the credit for it. So I'm really proud of that. Second thing I'm proud of is in the second year, we were able to eliminate a ban on TANF eligibility for drug felons. And that sounds complicated because in some ways it is. After the war on drugs in the 1980s, one of the things that was 80s and 90s, one of the things that was left was that we wanted to ensure that people that were convicted of drug felonies would not be able to go out and be able to have access to cash welfare assistance or food stamps. So years before I was in the legislature, we eliminated the ban on eligibility for food stamps. But this past session, we finally did it. And part of this was inspired by my wife and I visited the women's prison this past session. And if you ever visit the women's prison, you walk in and you might be astounded to see that there's lots of toys, because we have a women's prison that's full of moms. And when those moms get out, we want them to be sober. We want them to get the drug assistance they need. We want them to reunify with their families. We want them to get to work. And we want to save the taxpayers of South Dakota money. We don't want them back in our back into our correction system. And so this bill provides a little bit of assistance to some of those moms and dads to allow them to get the financial assistance they need to keep their families together and to get jobs and to get clean.
Democrat Reynold Nessa, running for re-election to the South Dakota State Senate, would like your vote. Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
Aaron Tobin is a first-time candidate for the South Dakota legislature. Tobin is running for the South Dakota Senate in District 21.
Aaron Tobin, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about some of your top issues going into this election. What do you think voters really need in peer this upcoming session that you would want to focus on?
Yeah, well, being a health professional, I think there's going to be a lot of focus on COVID, and I think I am in a place where I can provide a lot of help and a lot of information and a lot of communication, and so I think that's important going into the legislative session. Mental health is something that has always been pretty near and dear to me as a healthcare provider, and so that's something I'd like to focus on as well. I also have, talked about education during my campaign, and I think working with teachers and kind of coming to some common ground and getting the best education for our children is something that's important to me and important to all of us. And then agriculture is so important to me. My family has done it for 4 generations, lived in Tripp County for 5 generations, and this is something that I want to keep seeing successful. So those are my main focuses, but there's a lot of things to focus on. So,
right. Let's talk a little bit about public health and just overall wellness. And I know one of the things that as we came into this pandemic, there were you know, gaps that, that people notice when we talk about, you know, internet access, for example, or broadband. And then there were things that, that people felt, hey, there was a really strong infrastructure here that we noticed right away benefited South Dakota during the pandemic. How do you sort of, from your perspective, build up more of that, of like an overall sense of wellness and well-being and access to healthcare, so that when the unexpected comes, we are as prepared as we can be and not going back and dealing with as many, you know, chronic diseases, for example? Or do you have thoughts on and where South Dakota needs to be stronger in our focus on public health overall?
You know, public health has a lot to do with communication. As data comes in about coronavirus or even some of the other problems that public health providers and all providers deal with, communication is key. Our two big systems, health systems, actually three big health systems, I think they do a good job of communicating across the rural areas. And I think that's a strength in South Dakota. And we have, you know, very good hospitals that set up good policies. And you know, we do have a lot of strengths. As far as weaknesses, I think those will come out in hindsight. Because everything that happens with coronavirus, we learn about it, and we plan for the future. And I do think there may be more pandemics that happen. And if we can set up a system so that we deal with it, we flip a switch and we deal with it the same way every time, I think that's going to be helpful in the future.
What have you learned about the importance of keeping providers connected in those rural areas? For example, are there ways to lean into that a little bit and encourage more doctors and nurses and nurse practitioners like yourself to find their passion in the smaller towns and in the rural areas instead of just being drawn out of state or to the larger population centers?
Yeah, we do a good job. The two systems that I've worked with are Sanford and Avera. And I think they've done a very good job of reaching out to the rural areas. I think we could improve in telehealth, you know, to see a specialist. That's 3.5 or 4 hours of a drive one way. So telehealth would be beneficial. And as those providers are watching in on their patients during these telehealth visits, they're also communicating with the specialist. And so it just offers a frontline way to communicate about what's going on with your patient. Of course, broadband access has to be improved in order to achieve all the communication and internet issues. But yeah, I think telehealth would be a good option. And I think it would be beneficial, and that's something we can keep working on.
Yeah. Say more about education, as we have are looking at so many challenges for parents and teachers and administrators, as we, again, are, they're asking them to pivot, to reinvent how they teach, to redesign classrooms. We expect a lot of teachers and administrators. What do you imagine the role of the state legislature can be to recognize that work and to help it help make it more effective, more efficient, more solid, and more rewarding for all involved?
Well, as far as education in general, without coronavirus, I think we have to have a competitive salary for teachers. You know, I have two kids in public school, and I want them to have all the same opportunities as anyone else across the state or even across the nation. And I do think our teachers feel like they haven't always had a, you know, strong voice at the table. And we need to be in this together. I mean, my kids are in school, and, you know, what they learn is going to predict their whole future. And education has to be at the top of the list for importance. Now, as far as coronavirus, I think the general consensus is that the schools are making decisions based on the community that they're in and making day-to-day decisions, and I trust them to do that. I think it's important to note, though, that this is a virus. People will get sick. I mean, we have never been able to stop viruses completely. People will get sick, and people will die. That's the way viruses are. But the main goal was to not overwhelm our health systems, and we have met that goal. And so now keeping those rates lower, of course, is a goal now, but it still will happen that people will get sick and people will die. And just trying to lower those rates is all we can do, really.
Let's close with a little bit about agriculture, another area you said is important to you and important to state legislature, the work that the legislature does. We saw problems with that in the pandemic as well, where people were kind of waking up to how things were consolidated in the packing industry. We had food shortages. Talk a little bit about your ideas for strengthening local ag and the local food supply chain. What are some of the early steps that that need to happen next?
Right. Well, at the federal level, you know, they are working on MCOOL and even the Direct Act, which will allow state-inspected beef to be sold across state lines. But at the state level, I think we can incentivize local processing, but those ideas do have to come from farmers and ranchers themselves. We've seen other states with programs like co-op programs that I think are great ideas, but it will take the farmers and ranchers to come to us, and then we can work on the legislation to deal with it. I think overall, keeping taxes low is always going to be helpful for the people who are doing business in the area, and keeping regulations smart. I mean, we don't need unnecessary stress on our already stressed producers. So I think those are ways to provide food security, because when you look outside and you see 200 cattle sitting out in the pasture, but you're not sure where you can process them and get the meat to the people who need it, then that's not food security. And I think we need to look at the silver lining and make it happen so that in the future we're always food secure.
Erin Tobin is running for the South Dakota State Legislature. She's running for a Senate from District 21. Erin, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you so much.
Jennifer, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Lori, it's great to be with you today.
Let's talk about some of your top issues. What's top of mind for you and for people that you're talking to as you ask for their vote this November?
Well, over the past few years, it's really been, I've really become discouraged by legislation coming out of PIER. It, not only has it been divisive, but it distracts from the priorities of most South Dakotans, and I don't think it reflects our values. South Dakotans deserve lawmakers who will work to make our state the best it can be. And my campaign focuses on three issues that are of greatest importance to people here in District 1. You mentioned those, the economy, education, and health care. You know, and as far as the economy, family farms and small businesses are really the heart and soul of rural South Dakota. And I will advocate for policies that support them and help them thrive. Our rural areas shoulder a bulk of the tax burdens, while our roads, which are essential for everything from transporting grain and livestock to supporting tourism at our lakes and parks, are frequently in disrepair, and this needs to change. Second is education. Our children deserve a quality education from early childhood through high school and beyond. I support fully funding K-12 education, competitive teacher pay, and affordable tuition at our post-secondary institutions. And finally, health care. Rural health care is a necessity, and our access to these essential services is continuing to disappear in our rural areas. And I'll fight for the funding needed to continue providing quality care in our nursing homes, clinics, and hospitals, including reallocating funds to allow for a cost-neutral Medicaid expansion. I believe that together we can do better. I will bring that vision to the legislature, and we'll work hard every day to ensure that the priorities of District 1 are heard in PIER.
How do you think Medicaid expansion, because that was a topic under consideration under Governor Dennis Dugard, it did not pass. Would that have made a difference during the pandemic as we move forward if South Dakota had chosen that option? What do you sort of, I'm asking you to kind of speculate here, but what would you hope would have happened and will happen in the future if Medicaid expansion is secured in the state?
Well, we have such a gap in coverage for so many people who are not able to afford health care coverage but are not qualifying for Medicaid. And I think the more that people are staying away from their doctors and from receiving health care means that if they have ongoing medical issues that are not being treated, they're more at risk if they do contract COVID with those pre-existing conditions. And they might also be staying away from even getting treated or finding out if they've tested positive, if they're having any symptoms, because they avoid going to the doctor. So I think expanding Medicaid would potentially help us in a situation like this pandemic, and having more people covered. I think we're seeing some other states that in many ways are similar to South Dakota that are choosing to expand Medicaid now recently. And I think that perhaps it'll be something that South Dakota will look at more seriously now in the future.
Let's talk a little bit about education, and I'm wondering particularly about what you said about higher education and taking children from this K-12 model and helping them make that transition. We are pretty far away from having what some people would consider an affordable post-secondary tuition in this state. What are some of the steps to make that happen, or to move in a direction that you think would really make a difference?
Well, it is such an essential investment for our economic growth. I know I attended SDSU a little over 20 years ago, and it was a tremendous value at that time compared to other states and other options, our public universities, and that's really not the case anymore. The tuition and fees have risen at a much higher rate than wages in our state. So people are coming out of college with more debt, and there's a real lack of well-paying jobs to support those loans. I think that we're losing our best and brightest to other states where they can earn more money. Now, the steps that we take to do that, I mean, really, these are state universities, so they're reliant on being supported by the state. And I think that that's decreased over the years. And as such, tuition and fees have had to go up in order to fill that gap. But I think that, you know, over time, we're going to even see our enrollments go down as it becomes less of a good value. Our technical Sure. schools, on the other hand, I think that we do have a lot of good value there, and those have really stepped up to fill that gap where more students were going to four-year universities in the past. I think they're seeing technical schools as another option, and that is a great option. There are just certain fields that are not going to be fulfilled through a technical education, so we want to make sure that we're really offering a broad range for students from technical all the way through higher education and graduate programs.
Yeah, and you mentioned the distraction of certain topics that you see coming out of peer year after year. Some of those topics are very, important to the people who bring that legislation forward. Talk a little bit about leadership and, collaboration and conversation with other lawmakers. Let's get personal with you a little bit. What do you think you bring to those conversations to convince people that there's different work that you could be focusing on as lawmakers versus some of these things that are really important to other people, but that you think paint a picture of South Dakota that is not accurate?
Well, I think in my conversations with people, certainly here in District 1 and in other parts of the state, a lot of the issues that are coming up in peer are not things that average South Dakotans really care about. I think there's a lot of outside influence with some of our legislators to use South Dakota as kind of a testing ground for certain ideas that really don't resonate with most South Dakotans. And they may just be something that particular legislator or group of legislators are being influenced by some outside groups to bring in some divisive ideas. And most people that I've talked to and went in my period of time deciding if I was going to run for the legislature was, why are they focusing on these kinds of things? We have so many other issues, economy, education, healthcare being the three that really come up most often. I don't find people being so concerned about which bathroom someone is using or personal medical decisions that should be made between families and their doctors rather than being dictated by the legislature.
Jennifer Healy Kainz is running for state representative in the state legislature from District 1. Jennifer, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you so much, Lori. Have a great day.
Now that's the show for this week. Thank you for joining us. Again, if you're looking for an individual segment from our radio program, you can find all of our segments at listen.sdpb.org or by following the In the Moment Segments podcast. And if you have a story idea, send an email to inthemoment@sdpb.org. For Lori Walsh and Chris Loffrey, I'm Josh Heyer. Thank you for listening.